listed 436 people for sale. So again, it was widely publicized.
I'm almost speechless. I really am almost speechless because it's a catalog to buy people. That's number one.
Yes.
There were brokers involved. There was a pre-sale where people could come inspect. This is just so, it's so horrifying to actually consider and think about. 30 babies, infants sold for $100 each. I am so speechless at the moment. My question is, you know, why didn't we know about this? And I would think it would be hard for anyone to share this. Is that why these stories are just, we just don't know these things because it's just so horrendous and so horrific?
Yes.
It's not shareable?
Well, I remember asking myself those questions too, you know, and I think that the answer lies somewhere in between the fact that some people want to forget this, don't want to talk about this. And it's a couple of reasons. I mentioned Brian.
The broker.
The broker. He's got descendants here. Some of his descendants know about him and are listening to this very interview. As they listen to this interview, they shirk. They probably don't want to hear some of this stuff because it's their blood. It's their great-great-grand that they are so proud of. Okay, so there's a side of people that want to forget this, move on. We're beyond this. Why are we talking about this? Even on our side, on the African-American side, sometimes we associate enslavement with shame. We don't want to talk about this. We've moved on. But here's what I say. Slavery was shameful, but there's nothing to be ashamed of. Being a descendant of somebody who was held against their will, these people were men and women, boys and girls, of character, integrity, faith, everything. Tremendous people. I'm a descendant of enslaved people, though it doesn't sound because you mentioned I'm from Ghana. Let me say this. My great-great-great-grandfather came from Jamaica, came to Ghana, called the Gold Coast back then, married an African woman, and I'm a direct descendant of that. I didn't even find this out until, you know, adult life. But I'm very proud of that. I'm proud of the fact that here was a man whose ancestors themselves were enslaved in the sugar plantations of Jamaica. But he, at some point, said to himself, I hear that we're from the Gold Coast. I'm going back. So for me, it speaks of a man with tremendous drive, a man with, you know, with purpose, you know. So I think we should look at our enslaved ancestors and look at the strength of character they had to be able to endure the things they did because they were thinking about you and I. They were thinking about their offspring. They were thinking about the generations to come. They could envision a Condoleezza Rice. They could envision all the great men and women of African and African-American heritage today.
It is an amazing story, and it is one that, honest, I had just never heard before. And so to hear this and to think about this, it just really, it hurts.
It does.
It is very hurtful. And for you to talk about, when you talked earlier about knowing your identity and knowing where you're from and knowing that when you're passing over that little marsh land, mm-hmm. what was really going on there. And for most of us, that's uncomfortable to do.
Yes.
Is there a way to move forward from that?
Yes. And I'm so glad that you asked that. Because when I decided to engage this, it wasn't because I wanted to engage the hurtful past just for the sake of engaging it. But I see it as, in a way, a catharsis. You know, when we get hurt, all of us, you get a bruise on your arm or any place else. Let's take us back to when we were all kids. You scrape your arm. Your mother says, come here, I'm going to clean this. It's going to hurt. You're like, no, I'm fine. But you know, she knows better. She gets out the alcohol. She gets out whatever it is. It has to hurt a little bit, sometimes a lot. But that is how you can end up making sure that there's no infestation and the Band-Aid goes on, and hopefully everything gets back to normal. Now, that doesn't mean that it doesn't leave a scar. We all have scars. But many of us, you can touch your scars and it does not hurt. It's a reminder, though, of what happened. So for me, I think, to your question, what has to happen is this. We should not shirk away, hide away from this. We need to engage it, but not just because we want to re-engage the hurt. But what can we do with it? It leads to one of the important things to me is commemoration or memorialization. Most of these sites don't have markers that tell exactly what happened. That's hurtful. But if we can build memorials, monuments, markers, they become educational. They become a place where we can go to. That's what memorials are about. Let me engage 911, for instance. Very hurtful time in this country. Atrocious that so many people will be killed. Let's just even take New York City. Horrible. But there already are memorials. The memorials cost lots of money. Why are the memorials important? The memorials are important so that that little boy, that little girl, whose father or whose mother entered the burning buildings and lost their lives, so that on the anniversaries, the remaining parent can take them to that memorial. They can salute the flag. They can say, you know what, Danny, your daddy did not die in vain. Mary, your mama was a hero. She was a heroine. Think about what that does to that little boy, that little girl. It allows them, in spite of the tragedy, to grow up in this country, to feel that their parents were honored for their sacrifice. That's what has to happen in this case.
And for the weeping time, finally, 2008, they did place a memorial at the racetrack where it occurred.
Yes. Well, let me qualify. In 2008, you're absolutely right. The Georgia Historical Society and the city of Savannah placed a Georgia historical marker. But it is not in the exact location where the slave sale happened. The marker, by its own words, says it is placed, or it says that the event, the slave sale event, happened a quarter of a mile southwest of where the marker is. So it's close by, not exactly where it did happen.
And listeners, we're here talking about the Weeping Time with Dr. Kwesi DeGraft-Hansen, a landscape architect and historian who has done research on the Butler Island Plantation and this particular sale. And you've done so much research, you've actually tracked down some of the descendants from that sale. How did you go about doing that? And what was that like when you actually talked to people who had descended from this tragic event in our history?
Yes. Well, let me say this. Let me make a correction. I was very fortunate. The very first person that I encountered who is a direct descendant, well, I was searching for them, but they had done a lot of research on their own. So let me qualify that. There's this lady in California. Now, in 2011, I was invited to come and speak on the Weeping Time in Savannah. And in anticipation of some of the questions that happened at the end, I thought, what if someone asks me, where are the people? Where did they go? Where did they end up? I mentioned that the newspaper advertisements in 1859 mentioned that the advertisements were placed throughout the Southeast. And then Dostix, who's a reporter I mentioned, he came from New York, the Tribune. He mentioned that people came from all over the Southeast. So we know that, theoretically, the people who were bought from Savannah went throughout the South. But there are no records. I went to the City Hall in Savannah. I went to, you know, I tried to find out if there are records.
A bill of sale.
You know, I couldn't seem to find anything. That doesn't mean it's not there. But I was not successful in finding anything. People told me, we don't have anything like that. Anyway, so again, back to 2011 and this talk I had in Savannah. I thought, why don't I go on the internet and just see if I'll find something? I was pleasantly surprised to find a website that had listed the names of some of the people who were sold at the slave sale. So I knew instantly that whoever had put that website knew what they were talking about. I reached out to them. And there's this woman in California, And she told me that she indeed was a descendant. So you ask how I found out about them and how I felt. Well, let me share with your listeners the story she told me, if I may. She says she was minding her own business. She's a California girl for all she knows. She's listening one day to a PBS documentary, Africans in America. Most of your listening audience have heard of that or have seen it. And there was mention of the 1859 slave sale in Savannah, and they mentioned that it was the Butler slave sale. She got interested or intrigued because her grandmother, her mother's mother, was a Miss Butler from Louisiana. So she thought, wait a minute, Georgia, Louisiana, maybe, just maybe. So she starts doing some research. She says she went on Ancestry.com and then also on the U.S. federal census. She finds the 1910 U.S. federal census and finds her grandmother as an 8-year-old girl in Louisiana in her parents' household. So she's listed with her brothers and sisters and her mother and her father. Her father is called James Butler and her, sorry, yeah, the grandmother's father, I mean, is called James Butler and the grandmother's mother is called Hannah. So anyway, she digs around again, going further back. You know, as we know, the census is done every 10 years. So from 1910, she looks at 1900 and then 1990. She didn't find anything in 1900. And then 1890, the census is not available. I suppose it got burned. But in 1880 and 1870, she finds James in his parents' household. In the 1870 census, he's listed alongside his brothers and sisters and his parents. And James, who is Annette's great-grandfather, James's father is listed as John. So that's Annette's great-great-grandfather, John Butler, and his wife was called Betty Butler. To make a long story short, in the census, it lists your age, your name, sex or gender, where you're living at the time of the census, and where you're born from. Correctly. She finds out that the parents, John and Betty, and two children, Kate and Violet, were listed as being born in Georgia. Everybody else was born in Louisiana. So she says she knew. There must have been a movement from Georgia to Louisiana. And back in the day, a movement meant being sold. She gets online again and she finds this article incredibly. And at this point, I have to give the details of it. I've mentioned Dough Sticks for a while. Dough Sticks was a newspaper reporter from the New York Tribune. He's the one who came south, pretended to be interested in buying slaves. And so he wrote an account, very vivid account, of the slave sale. And it was published March 9, 1859. And it's simply titled Great Sale of Slaves in Savannah, Georgia, March 2nd and 3rd. So for your listeners who want to Google it, just Google Dough Sticks, D-O-E-S-T-I-C-K-S. It will probably come up. Anyway, it's online. It happens to be the only recorded eyewitness account of the slave sale. And it was online. Imagine, Annette says she finds it online and she's reading it. This story has so many incredulous things. And let me say this. The catalog we referred to earlier had 436 names. Dough Sticks, as a good reporter, wanted to give, for lack of a better word, a flavor of this slave sale. He takes excerpts of the names and puts it in his account. So he puts number 1 through number 4 on the catalog in it. Then he skips the next 95 so names. And he picks up again with number 99 for a little bit. Guess what? Number 99 is John Butler. Number 100, Betsy. Well, in the 1880 and 1870 census, she's referred to as Betty. But in the slave sale catalog, she's listed as Betsy. So John is listed as, I think he's 30 years old. Betsy's 29 years old. Kate, 6 years old. Violet, 3 months old.
So that family was sold intact, we think, to Louisiana?
They were sold intact to Louisiana. Yes, they were sold intact to Louisiana. And so Annette, once she finds this, she, as you can imagine, she just digs up. And so I am, you know, our research collided, let's put it this way, or came together. But she'd done all the research. And I was incredulous. I said, Annette, you've never been, she's never been to Louisiana, never been to Georgia. And from California, she had found this incredible history. all the way back to Savannah, to the Tenbrook Racecourse. Her ancestors were sold March 2nd, 1859.
This is just amazing. I could talk to you a whole nother hour, Dr. DeGraff Hansen. This is just such a very interesting story. What do you want to come out of this research? You talk about honoring our ancestors. You talk about memorials and commemorating. You talked about identity, that you're walking on sacred ground when you're walking across some golf courses and some other places where we just don't know the history. What is your ultimate goal in this?
Thank you. I would say that my ultimate goal is at least twofold, maybe three. The very first, though, you mentioned, I think that these places need to be marked. I think it's atrocious that they're not marked or not marked correctly, because then it's a travesty on top of a travesty. So I think that the places that are known, the people who know about these places should talk about these places. And they need to be, at the very least, these Georgia Historical Society markers or other markers. That's one. Then again, I think that the idea of commemoration is larger than just the markers. I think, let's think about the words we said. The largest slave sale in recorded American history. It deserves more than just a simple marker. It needs a memorial, and a huge memorial. The Vietnam Veterans Memorial is there in Washington, D.C. for a reason. All the memorials, the 911 memorials we talked about, whether they're in Washington, D.C., Shanksville, Pennsylvania, New York, they're there for a reason. Memorials speak to tragic events. Say we remember the people who were involved in it. We will endeavor to not have these things happen again. So it's a whole statement. When you have slavery, the largest slave sale, there's not a major memorial. What does it say? So I would like to see a large memorial. I would like to see it in Savannah. Some people say where? I think Savannah would be a great place. But again, ultimately, even if it's in Washington, D.C. or in Atlanta, the important thing is it has to be somewhere that allows us to not forget about it. And then the third thing is, I think it's important for the descendants, many who are searching, to know these places associated with their ancestors, and also to sort of come together, not just the descendants of the enslaved people. Annette and her family in California, this woman I mentioned, they're galvanized. They want to come to Georgia. They actually want to come to see the places where their ancestors were enslaved in, and even the place where they were sold. It's going to be sad. It's going to be all, but think about it. It's also an empowering moment for them, because what it says is that two people were sold from here, or well, four, two parents and two children were sold from here, almost into oblivion. But look at the army that has descended from them. You know, And for me, what it says is that it shows that the human spirit is indomitable. You cannot destroy a people. And nothing, but you see, when they are strong on the inside, it doesn't matter. So those two men, those two people, John and Betty, walked out of here with two toddlers.
And they survived.
And they survived. That's one.
And they didn't weep.
They didn't weep. Head held high. And they've produced, as I said, an army, so many descendants doing well, going strong. So I'd like to see some of that come, sort of that, those trips back. I've identified their descendants right here in Atlanta, Butler descendants in Philadelphia, in Florida. So I'd like to see reunions where these people come together and walk the very grounds where their ancestors toiled and claim these places, not as places of just the hurt, but of triumph. When we walk back over these places, we're walking over them in triumph.
In triumph. Dr. Kwesi DeGraff Hansen, I just want to thank you so much for coming and sharing this very, very personal story on slavery, on the Weeping Time, especially now during Black History Month. I just want to thank you for the work that you've done.
Thank you so much. And if I may, there's one other thing I was supposed to mention. I think I'd like to. I have recently been part of a group, to your question again, that has started a nonprofit organization. The acronym is OCEANS, O-C-E-A-N-S, and it stands for Organization to Commemorate Enslaved African Americans. And it's going to try and do all the things we talked about, commemoration, these types of homecomings, and so on. So for your listeners who are interested, I want to give the website, if that's okay.
Yes, please.
It is OCEANS1, so www.oceans, the number one, .org, oceans1.org. We've just started, and please go online, take a look at it. It's not fully up and running like we'd like to. It's a work in progress right now, but your listening audience can register their names and stay in touch with us, and would like to, for you all to be a part of it.
I think that's wonderful. It's oceans1.org, O-C-E-A-N-S, the number one.org. Dr. DeGraff Hansen, I just want to thank you so much for sharing with us about this unique history, and for sharing your ideals and your history and your research with us, because I'm sure a lot of us did not know about this. A lot of us did not know about this, and I'm personally going to do something special on March 2nd and 3rd of this year, because you've let me know that those are days that I should commemorate.
Thank you so much. And you know what? Again, if I have just one more word, I like what you said. You said you're going to do something on March 2nd and March 3rd of this year. And we should, because, you know, those days were very important. Those are the days that some of our ancestors got dispersed to where they are today, or where they went and where we are today. So if all we do is a moment of silence on that day to remember them, we should. You know, we take time to remember so many things. We celebrate the people who eat the most hot dogs. We celebrate the largest onion. We celebrate everything but the largest slave sale. So we should. So yes, I thank you for encouraging your listening audience on March 2nd and on March 3rd this year. Wherever you are, pause.
And think about it.
And think about it. And remember these people. For those of you who are in Savannah, go to the memorial, to the marker. Spend some time there and remember our ancestors. Thank you so very much, Kiplin. I appreciate you having me on the air. Thank you for giving me this time.
Thank you so much.